Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, February 17th. I'm Ray Graff. Time once again to talk car maintenance and repair with Gordon Fricke. You recall we had an archive edition during the fun drive of a past show, but this time he's here live and he'll answer your calls. 800-348-2551. If you have a car issue you want to discuss with Gordon Fricke, usually a popular show. Better to get in early. 800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke and your car calls coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. On the program today to answer your automotive maintenance and repair questions is Gordon Fricke, owner and operator of Barber & Fricke Automotive Incorporated, an independent repair, towing, and used car facility in lovely Hoosick Falls, New York. Gordon has been in the automotive repair and service industry for a lot of years. He knows a lot of things. You want to find out? Give us a call. 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also email the program at voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org, or 800-348-2551. Mr. Gordon Fricke, good to have you back in the studio. How are you?
That's great. Glad to be here. How are you doing?
Good. Did you hear your archive edition during the fun drive?
No, I didn't. You just mentioned it earlier. And sometimes when that happens, people say, hey, I just heard you the other day. And I'm thinking, I wasn't on the other day, but yeah.
So, you know, during the fun drive, we had a lot more programming this time around, which was great.
Yeah.
The listeners loved it and we loved it. So I cut together a week's worth of archive editions so that it left room for people to pitch for the fun drive. And yours was one I think we did late last year. You sounded pretty good. It's weird to hear it after the fact.
It is weird to hear it separately. Once in a while, I'll just play it back or part of it, and it is kind of odd.
Yeah, but this is live, so I want to reiterate, if you have a question about your car or truck, 800-348-2551 is our number, because we're live. And, you know, in the beginning of the show, it's usually a couple of minutes of old guys complaining about technology today. And we call this segment, What Would Roger Think? And you said before we started, you have a couple of new ones.
I could probably go the whole show on What Would Roger
Think. Now, for those who don't know, Roger is who?
So Roger was a veteran Ford mechanic, not just Ford. He was a mechanic of everything. He was one of these guys that could fix anything. And he loved puttering and tinkering, and he just was a very talented guy. He worked at Haynes Brothers Ford, which became the building that I moved into and have since sold. And Don McCabe, who works with me in the shop now, was an employee at Haynes Brothers and Haynes Ford and worked with Roger.
Right.
So he got a lot of veteran experience and mentoring from a guy like Roger.
Yeah.
And so when we encounter ridiculous tech, stupid things. Why did they put this there? Why do you have to take apart 400 things to get to one?
Right.
We now say, what would Roger think? So, two vehicles. I'm not ganging up on Toyota, but they happened to be Toyotas.
Okay.
One was a 4Runner, and it needed a rear wiper arm. So, if you look on the back of most sport utilities, the rear wiper arm is on the tailgate, standing up, wiping the windshield. You flip the little plastic lid off or up or take the cover off. You remove the nut. And sometimes with a puller, you take the wiper arm off. Pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
Almost in today's world, an easy, fun job. This 4Runner, it was buried. Actually, it's coming out of the top of the tailgate, not the bottom. And it's under a plastic spoiler under a plastic guard. No way to get it off because the wiper arm was pretty corroded to the shaft. So we look in our database, and sometimes we'll check some videos, and sure enough, you got to take the plastic upper spoiler off and the plastic guard that surrounds it. So, a 10-minute job becomes an hour job.
And a more expensive job.
Well, of course.
For the customer, yeah.
And then this morning, Toyota Corolla needs what used to be a super simple, basic, easy-to-change component called a PCV valve. Your Le Mans had one in the valve cover. You could change it in 5 minutes.
Right.
This one is buried under the intake manifold. So you first take the intake manifold off to gain access to the PCV valve, which is a really quick maintenance item that, you know, has a, it does gunk up and need to be replaced at times. So you've gone from another 5 minute job to a, I don't know, 2.5 hour job.
It's ridiculous. What would Roger think?
He'd think they got to put that PCV in a better place and wipe, put the wiper in a normal location.
What would Roger think about the old 1999 Cadillac DeVilles I had that both blew head gaskets? And the parts themselves are not very expensive, but the labor is so insane because of the way they jammed stuff in that very well-performing engine.
Yep.
Until it blew, and they both blew.
That's when GM got into the aluminum engine business, I should say again, because they had a terrible experience with the Chevy Vegas. And all aluminum engines are very popular, common now, but studs and cylinder head bolts and how everything clamps together is absolutely critical. And they got it wrong on that North Star.
The number here is 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is our guest. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. This one came in this morning from Tom in Gardner, Mass. Last week on my Ford Explorer, I noticed a wheel balancing problem. It wasn't the wheel, but wheelhouse panel where ice and snow accumulate. Could you talk a little about the difference?
Do you think that's talking about the stuff that gets packed in the wheel well, not in the rim?
I think wheel well is probably what he meant, not wheelhouse.
Because what brings also to mind, we sometimes get a lot of shaking complaints, shimmying steering wheel and car shaking at speeds of, let's say, above 40 and on up, sometimes quite heavy and violent. And it's slush and snow that froze in the wheel overnight. It melted and it stayed in the wheel, and now there's a pocket of ice or slush that froze in your wheel, and it's a massive imbalance. So if that's what he's referring to, other than cleaning them out at the end of the day, that's about the only solution. If it's inside of the wheelhouses, there's nothing you can do about it. The tire picks up the slush and throws it under the fender well.
Now, what do you mean the wheelhouse?
The surrounding of the tire and wheel.
Isn't that the wheel well? No, or am
I
wrong?
You can call it the wheel well.
It's the same thing.
Yeah.
Understood. Number here is 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is our guest. Jeffrey wrote in, my car has 160,000 miles. Should I be adding any additives to my gas tank?
Well, it's always a good idea to use a super high quality additive, which will act as a cleaner and or a detergent to get carbon and various deposits away from your intake valves, depending on your engine design, your fuel injectors themselves, the piston tops, and some of these will also help clean up your O2 sensors downstream. And the good quality brands are basically the same additives that the refineries put in, or not the refineries, but the fuel companies, gasoline companies, put in to make their different grades, their different additive packages.
Yeah.
So the answer, all that talk is, the answer is yes.
So let's just talk about the different grades of gas. If your car, if money is no object, and believe me, premium has stayed very high while regular sort of dips a little bit
right
now. And I'm finally seeing it under four regularly, which is great. If money was no object and you had a car that only required regular, lower octane
yep.
gas, is it still okay and or advisable to go with the higher octane stuff?
It won't do any good. If the engine was designed for, let's say, 87 octane,
right,
putting in 89 or 91, you'll achieve nothing. What you're looking at for are top-tier gas suppliers that meet all of the detergent requirements to be a top tier, and that keeps your engine clean and prevents a lot of deposits and formation that can cost you a ton of money down the road. So it's not really the octane. If your gas cap says minimum 91,
yeah,
you really should put 91 in it. But if it's a regular gasoline engine where there's no requirements of octane, you certainly can run 87.
But why would they put more detergent? I don't know if you can get in the head of the gas companies, but why would they put more detergent in the premium gas?
Well, they will do that as a selling point to say, look, our Ultra 93 has max cleaners and additives in it. Selling point to sell the more expensive gasoline.
Yeah.
But top tier has the max amount or the adequate amount in all of their grades.
Okay, well, I'm going to leave it alone here. I got another ton.
You're stuck on octane, aren't you?
No, but I mean, is there too much? Can you put too much cleaning additives in the gas?
You mean by pouring it in the gas tank?
No. I mean, can a gas company, big concern, go too far with the cleaners?
They wouldn't, because they are violently expensive.
Okay.
The quantities they mix in are, you know, by the bucket, but they're very expensive buckets.
All right. Number here is 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke's our guest. One more email for now, and then we'll take a break, and then we'll hit the phones. This one is from Edward. New car purchase without bells and whistles. Hi, Gordon. What's the simplest? Oh, I hate these because now you have to recommend a car. Mm. What is the simplest new car I could buy with the least amount of screens, sensors, automatic controls, Wi-Fi, all of that stuff I could never figure out anyway? Is there anything?
Yugo.
They don't have Yugos anymore.
Oh, what am I thinking? That was
in the
80s.
New car.
You just have to shop and look at the specs and, you know, buy the most base model they make.
Yeah.
It's just a little bit of research to see who's got the most basic vehicle.
All right.
I don't think you're going to get
a diplomatic answer.
I don't know if you'll get hand manually cranked up windows anymore, but
I want that.
You might.
I want to have that in case my car goes underwater. Then I can get out.
You can spin the windows open yourself.
And float away to freedom. 800, these are the things that keep me up at night.
Yeah, of course.
800-348-2551. That's the number. Gordon Fricke's our guest. We're going to hit the phones in a moment. We'll be back. Chris Potter. Lift is the name of that one here on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is our number. Ray Graff with you. It's Cars Today with Gordon Fricke, and Gordon is back in Studio A. And let's go to the phone, shall we? We'll go and let's see. Mark is in Poughkeepsie. Mark, you'll be first. Go ahead.
Hi. I've got a BMW 2022 full-size car, and it has sudden acceleration. When I turn on the key, the gas pedal seems to go down to the floor, and it goes the engine races, and that happens also while we're driving it, which is kind of dangerous. Have you heard of that in BMWs?
So what model is the vehicle?
I'm trying to figure that out.
X is an X.
I'm on the road right now. I don't have it with me.
Is it a sport utility or is it a sedan?
No, it's a sedan. It's a convertible. It's a full-size model.
Okay. Yeah,
it's 2002.
Yeah, so it's not that critical. I know that the model of the car, but it's the years of 2022?
Right.
Okay, yeah. So BMW at one point, and it goes back probably into the 2000s, 2013 range, 12, 13, in that area, they figured out a way to eliminate the throttle valve. So the throttle valve is what you used to be connected to the gas pedal. When you stepped down on it, it opened up a flap that let more air in the engine. BMW devised a method of using the Vanos system. That's their variable valve timing system in BMWs to regulate the air to the engine as if it were a gas pedal. So when you step on the gas pedal, you request a certain amount of air. You say, okay, I'm going to put the car, I don't know, to the floor. Well, the computer says, okay, he wants to roll, open him up. And if you bring your foot back to, let's say, you know, a fourth of the throttle, it backs it down. There is a fail-safe in BMWs that if that Vano system or that valve-actuated so-called throttle fails, there is a throttle valve in there that gets called into action, and it takes over. So I don't know if you've got a problem with the Vano system or in the electronics that are linked between your accelerator pedal and what's happening to the engine. I'm surprised, though, if it's happening that wildly that you don't have a check engine light on, or do you?
No. There's a sport button that there's a button there that says sport.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if that has anything to do with it.
Well, the sport adjusts your shifting points of the transmission. It may tighten up the throttle, but you're saying the engine is you're getting some acceleration without you asking for it. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Nice.
I think what I would do is I would want to get that scanned by a shop that handles European cars like yours, or a dealer, because the software has to go deeper than just a code reader or a basic scan tool to see if there's some codes or evidence of the throttle system acting up. Because potentially that could be a problem, of course.
Big problem, yeah. Number here is 800-348-2551. It's Gordon Fricke Day today on the show. We'll go to Albany. Jeff, you're on.
Hi, guys. I talked to you about 2 months ago about my 2019 Altima.
Okay.
And the radio, clock.
Yeah.
Wouldn't keep time right.
Remember that. Yes.
And, yeah, we talked about it quite a bit, and we never came up with an answer.
Yeah.
Last month, my wife's battery died in the parking lot of a mall. And AAA had to come and put a new battery in it. That fixed it.
Aha.
So.
Yeah, and everybody else I talked to said, well, what if I just disconnected the battery? He says, oh, no, you don't want to do that.
Well, I don't know if we went so far as doing that reboot procedure, but yes, I would, if I didn't suggest that then, I'm sorry, but yeah, I would have said to reboot the car by unhooking the battery and then joining the wires. Ray's already looking at me.
No, this comes up every show. Every single show.
Yeah. So, so when you got a new battery, basically you, in effect, got a reboot of your modules, and apparently that got the clock back in shape.
Fantastic.
So that's great.
Good for you, Jeff. Thanks for the call. 800-348-2551. It's Gordon Fricke today and automotive repair. Let's go to Hartford. Bill in Hartford, how are you?
Pretty good. I got a strange question for you.
Okay, we have a strange answer.
I have a moderately old Land Rover that's sitting in my friend's yard, and we have taken it to about three places, including the last time the dealer. And the problem looks like there's something wrong with the computer module. And it's a starting problem. You can get it to start, and then you put a new battery in, but the battery will not charge, and it immediately goes dead. So, and we have gone to three places. The dealerships would like to spend $5,000 or more to fix it.
Oh boy.
And we're trying not to spend that kind of money. So I kind of been thinking and experimenting and stuff like that. That's just who I am. And so I was kind of saying, maybe we could put a separate starting system with a key in there. So you'd have two keys, one to run the old computer and one to separately start and charge the Land Rover. Is that weird or what?
What is the model of the vehicle?
I can't tell you anything because I've just been watching this to the side.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
So let me just get the symptoms correct. Does the battery go dead after a few days and it won't crank, or what are the symptoms?
If it's a new battery, it will crank.
Yep.
But that's it. After 12 or 24 hours, it goes dead and, you can't charge it.
Okay.
I mean, you could charge it externally with a charger,
yep.
But the charging system is all involved in that computer.
Yes.
And I was wondering if we could separate the two functions.
Yeah. So, but you're saying the battery goes dead with the car just sitting out in the yard for days.
That's right.
Okay. So you've got a...
Doesn't take days.
Yeah. So it's some type of a current draw. And the dealer, it's already been to the dealer and they can't find the current draw, or do they think it's from a module?
They think it's from the module. Yeah. They want to change the module 5,000 plus.
Yeah. How often does this vehicle get used? Is it a daily driver when it's operating?
Well, it's been sitting there for 2 years.
Oh,
we've
boy.
Been trying to figure out the problem.
Okay. Oh. Yeah. And that's bad because after 2 years of sitting, that vehicle's going to need other stuff. It's probably got really rusty brakes and all kinds of other things. But
right. That's right.
Yeah.
A nice car, too.
What we do in vehicles that have a slightly above normal current draw, we'll add a trickle charger, an onboard trickle charger, a battery tender that you plug into an extension cord. And if you're not going to use that vehicle for 3 or 4 days, you plug it in like it was an engine heater, but it's actually a battery tender. And if the current draw is not insane, but it's more than acceptable, that will keep the battery live and fully charged. And when you go to drive it, you just unplug the extension cord and you go. And I've got during the pandemic, I put a lot of these in because a lot of people weren't driving and their batteries were going dead sitting for weeks. So
wouldn't that kind of, though, if you're driving that, wouldn't the battery go dead if it's not charging while you're driving down the road?
Well, so I don't know if your charging system is the concern here, because you said that if you put a fully charged battery in it and it sits a couple days, that fully charged battery is dead. And the charging system in the vehicle isn't called into play until the engine's running.
Yeah.
So if there's a charging
a
charging system issue, that will occur while the car is being operated.
So run it.
Yeah. Exactly. But a battery tender might kind of fix it or cover it up.
Bill, thank you for the call. But isn't that just fixing the symptom and not the actual cause of the problem?
Yes. So milliamp draws are completely normal in cars today because of all the modules, computers, and all that stuff. And that acceptable draw has continuously gotten higher and higher and higher, and cars are getting bigger and bigger batteries to offset that. The average car, let's say you go to the airport and you go on a vacation, you're gone for a month.
Yeah.
A lot of cars will have a dead battery when you get back to the airport, which is no cause of anything but the parasitic draws, and no warranty will answer it. So if the milliamp draw is a little bit worse than it should be, but not insane.
Yeah.
You can keep up with it with a trickle charger. But you're correct. You didn't fix the problem.
Have you ever been able to go on a month-long vacation? Because that sounds pretty good. Anyway, let's go to Dave and Clarence. Dave, you're on.
Hey, Ray. Hi, Gordon.
Hi.
That basically answered my battery question. I have 3 cars off the road. And 2 of them are buried under snow. And I was wondering if I should just disconnect the positive battery lead while they're sitting there. And my second question is about the Porsche parade up in Lake Placid this year. We have a 1970 914 that we just picked up in the springtime. And I live outside Buffalo, so it's a 256-mile drive.
Wow, that'll be a
good
Lake
one. To Lake Placid.
Yeah.
Do you a 1970 car with 89,000 miles on it, about 60,000 on a rebuilt engine, would you take the chance of driving that far, or would you trailer it?
Wow, this is a no-win, you know, because if you say no, then he doesn't go. But if you say yes and he breaks down, then it's Gordon's fault.
No, it's actually a really good question because I'm of the I'm in the school of, unless you've got a pure antique that's highly valuable and you don't dare drive it, and if one scratch on it, it's going to freak you out, okay, you can't drive that car. It's a museum piece. You just go look at it. Other cars should be driven. That's why they were constructed. That's why you own it. And that would be a very cool ride to go in that car on. If you have a shop that's semi-familiar with that car, and no disrespect to the car, but the car is basically a Volkswagen.
It's a little underpowered for a Porsche, right?
Well, it's not bad because the car is so light. And in 1970, do you have the 2-liter engine? I can't remember what year they went to the 2-liter.
We have the 6-cylinder.
You've got one of
3,300.
I was going to say you've got the 9.4. You got a 9.14.6.
But doesn't that change your equation now? If there's only 30,000 of these made,
it'd still be nice to drive it. And he's got a 911 6-cylinder engine in the car, so you really should drive it.
Wow!
But that changes a little bit because it's a Volkswagen Porsche powered, so it's a little different of an animal. But that's a really unique vehicle, and I would get it all checked out as best you can, and I think that'd be a great ride for it. If you have Hagerty Insurance or any of those high-end collectible insurances, at least you've got roadside and lodging and everything to back you up if you have a problem on the trip.
When is the Porsche show, Dave?
It's June 14th to the 20th.
All right, so the weather in Buffalo should be clear. That's good.
It's all around the Olympic Center.
Well, I think that'd be great. Yeah, thank you. I could run up to that. That would be cool.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. Dave, thanks for and driving up there is great. Took my 65 Le Mans from Plattsburgh State up to the Dead Show at Saranac Lake.
Wow.
No, Lake Placid.
Yep.
In 1983.
Nice.
And it was a great, fun ride going up those mountains and coming down those mountains.
It is quite a ride, but it's in a car like that, it would be such a fun ride.
So the 914, when did they stop making those?
Oh, Dave could probably tell us, but I know he's already disconnected.
Yeah.
But didn't go too deep into the 70s. Maybe 75 would be the last one, because in 70 or maybe 74, because in 76 there was a demand for a more economically priced Porsche.
Yeah.
So Porsche took their 911 and went back to the 4-cylinder VW bus engine and called it a 912E. So anyway, I think around 1974 or 5 was the end of those.
I was surprised. You know, I've only been in a Porsche once. It was a 911 Turbo. And I'll tell you
That's the right one.
The guy drove this thing, man. We were on the Northway, and it's a fast car, a great car.
Yeah.
But I had read somewhere that there were a number of Porsche models in the 70s and 80s that were sort of underpowered.
Well, the 356 was like 90 horsepower. That was the version before the 911. The 912s were 90 horsepower, same engine as the 356. The 914s weren't high-powered vehicles, except for this one that Dave has. The 914-6 had a little more go. But once they got into the 911s, got into more six-cylinder power with fuel injection, they got pretty peppy.
All right, let's go back to the phones here. Gordon Fricke's our guest, 800-348-2551. Telesports in East Chatham. Hey, go ahead. You're on.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Howdy.
Long-time listener, happy to be speaking with you both.
Great.
I have a 2014 Honda Cross Tour. I suspect Mr. Fricke may be familiar with it. It's essentially an Accord on steroids in a hatchback structure. Wonderful car, wonderful use of space, 6-cylinder, 4-wheel drive. I'm pushing 160. I've owned it for a little more than half of that. I've maintained it religiously. And just the last couple weeks, it has, if I'm using a term correctly, the variable transmission. CVT, is that the correct term?
So what year is your car, did you say?
2014, the last year they made them.
And they were putting CVTs in them then, is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Oh, boy.
Yes.
And that's trouble? That's continuously variable transmission?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And the whole car's been trouble-free, as I say. I've maintained it perfect. Well, I can't say trouble-free. There's an electric module that's out. It's not really affecting any function. I've talked to Honda about it. It's like $2,500. And I'm sort of at the point of just deciding to drive the car into the sunset. But now this transmission issue has popped up, whereby particularly it seems when it's cold, as I start out, it will slip and the engine will accelerate, you know, when I quickly let off the gas and then generally, once I get going, it seems okay. But my question is this something remediable, or am I
asking for trouble?
Rainbow,
yeah. So the CVT's got off to a very tough start. At that mileage, there's no fixing them. You replace them. So that would bury the car alive to put a CVT in that at this stage of its life.
Exactly.
I don't know what Honda's fluid maintenance schedule was on their CVTs. Subaru at one point was saying don't do anything with it. Nissan had a fluid change schedule. But I don't think at this age and stage of this car's life, I don't think that's going to do you any good. It was a drain refill and I believe some type of filter.
Well, I have done that. I need to go back and look at my invoices, but I've done all the fluids on the prescribed schedule, and I just, in my memory, that was one of them.
Yeah, okay. If you've done all of that and it is clearly diagnosed as being a transmission concern, a CVT problem, unless Honda's got some glitches and sensor issues that they can fix, and I would consult a dealer for sure because that CVT's, you know, a different animal. But in most cars,
right.
If that CVT has any type of failure, nobody's fixing them. You got to replace it.
Hey, okay.
You got to replace them.
Yeah.
Which is thousands of dollars.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Terrible.
Sorry, buddy. We got to take a break here. 800-348-2551 is the number. Gordon Fricke's our guest. Cars, trucks, and whatnot. We'll check the email bag in a minute. Bonus points to Gordon Fricke, who could name that tune. That's Java. Billy May and the orchestra with the great Al Hurt on the trumpet there. You nailed it, Gordon.
New Orleans. Al Hurt's got some New Orleans sound.
And you know, he comes up during Medical Monday every now and
again. Is
that
right?
Because he had the very early, whatever it was, tummy tuck or some sort of surgery.
Yes.
And he lost a ton of weight. Do you remember that?
Yes, he was a big guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then not so big after all.
No.
And then he died. But, you know, that happens. 800-348-2551. All right, this is from Deborah. Can you please explain the eco setting on a Nissan Rogue SV all-wheel drive? I don't see a big difference in mileage, and I wonder what the eco setting is for the engine. Should I be using a specific gas to enhance the mileage? Thanks for your knowledge. That's from Deb in Rensselaer.
So we've had that question come up at different times. And, of course, my sarcastic answer is it just turns a light on when you push that button.
Yes.
Now, so what those ecosystems do is they do tweak and tailor certain things to try to get better fuel economy. A lot of Hondas had them in the day, and it would shift the transmission up a little quicker to keep the engine speed lower. And I'm not sure if it did much other than that. Maybe it had something to do with your throttle, but yeah, it just tweaks to try to get more economy out of the vehicle. And a lot of people would say, I can't really measure a difference.
But so it's just to make you feel better.
I think a part of it is.
All right. John in Western Mass writes in, subject heading winter engine oil. My 06 Honda CR-V has 225,000 miles. And it's a few complaining valves on startup and for a few minutes in 15-degree Fahrenheit and colder startups. Can I safely use the thinner weight multi-grade in winter, 0 to 20, instead of the recommended 5 to 20? Or does the maturity of the engine rule that out?
Yeah, good question, because higher mileage, the higher the mileage the engine has on it, the more worn things are going to be. And I would not recommend going to a, quote, thinner oil. And that's what that first number is. The 0W means winter. The W means winter. So the lower that number, the, quote, thinner it is. Flow is easier in cold weather. But 520, 530?
Five to 20 was recommended.
Yeah, 520, and then you can go 0-20. If he's getting ticking and clattering, thinner oil wouldn't do him any good. I would stick with the 520. Yeah.
Steve in Red Rock writes in, I recently purchased a 2025 Mazda CX-30 with a turbocharged engine When I asked the salesman if I needed premium gas, he told me, if I use regular, I'd get about 185 horsepower, and if I use premium, I'd get about 225 horsepower. A little internet searching indicates this seems to be true. Is it possible the engine computer senses the octane and adjusts the performance accordingly? Manual makes no reference to this, and that's from Steve in Red Rock.
Yeah, so there's been onboard, quote, knock sensors on engines for decades, and they are listening devices for detonation or engine pinging. So if you have a low-octane gasoline and it starts to make the engine ping, knock, or rattle, the computer backs the ignition timing off until the noise stops, and that keeps the engine from having trouble and allows you to burn the lower octane fuel.
Uh-huh.
Slightly poorer economy and less power. So if you put the highest octane in there, if the engine was designed to run on multiple octane gasolines, not stop at 87 or 89 or whatever,
yeah,
the answer is yes. You'll have a little more power and a little bit better performance and economy running the higher octane fuel.
All right.
If that specific car can change its horsepower that dramatically, I don't know.
All right, fair enough. Remember in the old days when they switched from leaded gas to unleaded gas, how many cars pinged? I recall that sound.
You're right, because the lead was a detonation modifier. It kept the detonation down by virtue.
Yep.
Yeah.
Patrick in North Adams writes in, I recently bought a replacement coil for my 1969 Grand Prix. Printed on the side of the coil is for use with external resistor. I don't see a resistor on the firewall. If I test from the positive terminal of the coil to ground with the key on, if I have less than 12 volts, is the resistor somewhere? And that's from Patrick in North Adams.
Yeah, I don't think that GM cars of that era had external resistance. A lot of cars did not. Chrysler, Dodge products, Plymouths had. They called them ballast resistors, and they were on the firewall or on the fender well, very visible. And that is a correct statement. You would get a voltage drop with the key on at the positive terminal of the coil. It won't. I don't know if it's what they drop it down to. That goes back a long time. But I think if he bought that coil at an auto parts store or online, it asked all the questions, year, make, model, engine. And it should have determined whether that was an externally resisted engine or not. But I don't believe it was.
Gordon Fricke is our guest today. It's 800-348-2551. We go to Charlemont and Jonathan. Jonathan, you're on.
Hey, Ray, Gordon, how you doing today?
Good.
Good.
Listen, I've got a 1988, it's an old one, Chevy K3500 pickup truck. Got the 5.7 engine and a turbo hydromatic 400 transmission. This truck owes me nothing. I've plowed with it for 25 years. It's had a new engine. It's had a transmission a couple of times. The question is this. The turbo hydromatic transmission, you know, it's got a pretty good reputation as a tough tranny. I've had it rebuilt a couple of times by a local shop. They're good people. They know what they're doing. But the only thing that seems to fail on it is the output shaft. And the output shaft, if you look at it, it's spun welded together. You know, you kind of scratch your head when you see it because it looks like there's not a heck of a lot of material holding it together. And yet the rest of the truck and the transmission are, you know, tough as nails. So that's the first question. I know you can buy a billet output shaft, but you lose your RPM sensor or something. The last part of the question, briefly, you know, I'm moving out of this. I've had this 88 for years. I've kept it running for years. I'm starting to buy 2000s. I'm working my way up.
Good for you.
I got a 2000 K3500. You know, same 5.7 motor, runs good. It's got a 4L80 tranny. It's a 4-speed. You know, a little easier to find a replacement. I got 3 donors now. But, you know, it's been hard to shake this. You know, I'm not getting any younger. You know, these trucks are so good. They're so tough. You know, James Bond would say, you know, you can set a martini on the air cleaner without upsetting the olive. You know,
right.
They're just so darn reliable. I hate the new trucks. You can't work on them. You pull a truck out in the middle of a field, an old Chevy, you got a working height where you can work on your chainsaw. These other trucks, you know, you got to be 7 feet tall, you
know? Listen, man, do you think James Bond ever drove a Chevy truck? I'm not sure about that. The second thing is, do you have a question for Gordon?
Yeah, the question is, you know, has he ever heard of that? The Turbo Hydromatic 400 Alpha Chef failing like that? You know, and what does he think, comparison-wise, Turbo Hydromatic 400 versus the newer 4L80?
Yeah, well, the Turbo 400 was in everything for decades and decades, and they were definitely tough go-to transmissions, and you could rebuild them. You know, a lot of guys were rebuilding them in their sleep. I'm surprised. Are these shafts spinning and breaking? Is that what's happening?
Yeah, just, you know, you're not even putting pressure and all of a sudden, bang, yeah. And it's broken.
Well, I know that.
Those
transmissions were definitely built for high performance use in the hot rod world. And I can't believe you can't get a better output shaft that still retains that. You were saying you're going to lose a speed sensor at the end of it?
I think that's what they told me. Yeah. I mean, they're available, billet, you know, pretty pricey, but they say you lose the speed sensor and then the engine doesn't know what the heck the transmission is doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm surprised that they don't make a replacement better shaft that takes the sensor. And I would just look into it, do an internet search and see. But the 4L80E took over, and same thing, they're very rebuildable. Everybody got used to those as well in your second truck. You know, the Turbo Hydro 400's really a very, very old design. They were good, tough transmissions.
Yeah.
And the 4L80E was a good replacement, more gears and more modern. And but, yeah, if you can get a shaft for the 400, great. I know you can, but you got to search out and see who's got one that fits it with the right sensor facilities.
All right, we lost Jonathan there toward the end of your answer, but you can always listen online there, buddy, and hear the whole thing. I'll have it up maybe 15 minutes after we're done here. Let's go to Milford and Keith. Keith, you're on.
Yeah, hi, Ray, and hi, Gordon. I actually called you guys a couple years ago.
All right.
And 1996 Toyota Corolla.
All right.
And what I have is a light on the dashboard. Now, when I spoke to you years ago, I had a chattering clutch. And, Ray, your story was that you had a clutch problem going to some casino, and you had to get towed back.
All the way to Albany.
When we figured out what the problem with the clutch was, I got a leak in my radiator, tried to nurse it home, and it broke a ring in the engine. So I decided it's a good car. I know everything else about it. I'm getting another engine. Found a 96,000 miles engine from California, put it in for $3,000. And the new engine runs great, but the exhaust gas recycle valve popped the light on the dashboard. And I can't find one for a manual transmission, only automatic.
Okay.
An EGR valve?
I think that's so. It's on the back of the engine, two bolts, and it has a vacuum line, and it goes through a switch. And it went bad on the other engine, but I took it off and cleaned it. I was looking for a new one, but they don't sell them for a manual. I can only find the automatic.
And so you are searching for an EGR valve, exhaust gas recirculation valve?
I'm pretty sure that's what it is, but I can't find a manual one,
right.
And there are two different ones, one for auto and one for manual, and they're like $200 if I could find one.
I mean,
what's the chance I could clean this one?
At this point, try it. If you cleaned your last one and got it to operate, if it's old school with a vacuum on it, which I think you said it had, you can take
and a bellows.
Yep, take that off of the engine, and you need a vacuum pump, and you hook the pump up to that valve with a hose, and you draw vacuum on it, and you see if that valve opens.
Okay.
If it does, the valve is operational, and you clean it up and put it back in. If it's not operational, okay, then you need a valve.
Yes, except for the fact that there's a shaft that goes through a bushing. What would be a good cleaner to get that gunk from the exhaust out?
Yeah, any penetrating oil that goes into some of those foaming penetrating oils will go in there and really loosen stuff up.
Ah, okay.
The Chrysler Corporation, or Mopar, used to make a great, they called it heat riser solvent, and they still make it. I don't know what they call it.
Oh, yeah, I remember when they used to freeze.
Yeah, and I think you can still buy that at a Dodge dealer, I believe, and it's maybe called something else now, but that was a good product.
All right, Keith, thanks a lot. Let's go to Fred in Albany. Fred, you're on with Gordon Fricke.
Hi there. So, quickly, I have an 87 Mercedes 560 SL with around 200,000 miles on it, this, that, and the other thing. But it was running a little rough, and it come to find out that there's two foul plugs. Two plugs are fouled, and all the other plugs are beautiful. That scares me. So is there a way to determine if this is, and I don't know if I'm using the right terms, but a top-end kind of rebuilt, in other words, like valve stem seals or something like that, versus a full engine rebuild, because they're, I understand if it's rings and stuff, you're talking about a full engine rebuild.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
Is there a difference, really, if it's the rings, is it a full engine rebuild? And if it's something like a valve sieve up top, it's a lot less money and a lot less work. That's the first question. And if so, is there a test to diagnose the difference?
Well, did you take out the spark plugs, or did a shop take them out?
A shop took it out, and I have faith in the shop, but we just didn't get that far yet.
Well, I guess my question is, do they feel that they were oil fouled or gasoline soot fouled? You know, if they're oily, is the car consuming a lot of oil or smoking?
It's not smoking. It has a kind of funny smell, and I used to put in on the order of magnitude of a quart every two fill-ups. But that's been going on since I bought it when it was about 170,000 miles.
Right.
Okay. So that's nothing new. Well, here, that hasn't changed.
Here's what you could have happening. You could have a couple of fuel injectors that are failing to spray properly, and they're drenching those spark plugs. And that could be remedied, first off, by additives in the fuel and spirited driving.
Right.
Spirited driving. I do a little of that.
Yeah. That's not driving with spirits. That's spirited driving.
I don't do that. All right.
But I would get if the other plugs are perfect, just replace the two that are fouled with the exact same spark plug.
Right.
And I would again ask your shop if they feel that's an oil residue or gasoline. And in any case, before you commit to fixing any engines, I would do the fuel additives. And you're probably not driving the car now anyway in this weather. But
right, that's right.
Run a couple of tanks of heavy-duty cleaners through it. Drive it
spiritedly
and see what happens.
All right, Fred, we got to leave it there. All right, Gordon Fricke. By the way, we got another email from Dave about the Porsche 914.
Yeah, the 6.
Reminds us that the Porsche Parade is June 14th through 20th in Lake Placid.
I like that.
I would like to go, only to see a bunch of cars that I'll never be able to afford.
But the old ones are going to be nice to see, some vintage stuff.
Well, we will see you next month. Thanks for being here.
Yes.
Support comes from Acres, Alden Country Real Estate Services, a holistic transactional real estate brokerage serving the Berkshires of Western Massachusetts. BerkshireAcres.com for information. Capital Region Classical at Union College, presenting cellist Sterling Elliott in works of Barber, Britten, and others, Sunday, February 22nd, 3 p.m., capitalregionclassical.org. At Curtis Lumber, providing materials from start to finish for any size building or home improvement project, daily service available at curtislumber.com. Thanks again to Gordon Fricke for being here. Thank you for listening. Thanks for the calls. Thanks for the emails. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Jim Mountier screened the calls. Thank you, Jim. I'm Ray Graff. Oh, boy. Tomorrow, we talk travel with our buddy, the dynamic Gene Gagnon. See you, too.